I firmly believe that we deserve, period.
I just feel like it's important to keep saying that out loud, that this is us learning in public.
The foundation of how to not have trash politics is really just relationships, right?
So if you're not aware of how powerful you are, then how can you be using your power to bring others up?
We're giving you collective liberation. We're giving you personal healing. We're giving you millennial auntie with a mic.
You're listening to Scene, the podcast.
It has been a wild 5 months in BC. So there was the heat dome, I think it was the end of June. We had wildfires throughout the summer, a lot of destruction, smoke. We had 3 atmospheric rivers in the last how many days?
I want to say, 5 days? Yeah, something like that.
Something like that. We've had, plus the one that we had a couple of weeks ago that caused landslides and mudslides and extensive damage. It's been a lot, and it's pretty hard to live in BC right now and deny climate change. There are people who will deny it no matter what, but for most of us, it is a kind of looming reality.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is.
So as we sit here today on, it's November 30th and the third of these 3 back-to-back atmospheric rivers is happening right now. I didn't really think there was anything we could talk about other than how we're coping with witnessing all of this, with the grief and fear and anger, maybe other emotions that come up. What have you been feeling?
I would say a lot of feeling out of control or feeling like I don't have control. And just like really sad for loss of life, human life, animal life, and like just what all of these signs point towards, which feels like, I don't want to say the word is fated because that seems like it's like meant to be, but it's like it's bound to happen given, I guess, the ways that we live and like exist on land to like, and so anyways, I feel very, it's like very scary to be honest. My partner was stuck up north for 5 days and he like, you know, we have enough class privilege that he was able to fly home, and but a lot of people didn't, and it was just like I was just really stressed out, like worried about him getting home and really grateful that I didn't put pressure on him to come home sooner and take Highway 99, because that highway slid and the amount of like stories that are coming out about like the loss of human life from that highway is just so devastating. So it's, I don't know. And I also think, if I was being honest, there's that reality that where I am right now, I live like in Greater Vancouver, and I'm like higher up in elevation, like things don't feel different for me, right? But then also recognizing how that's not the case for everyone, and how even though things don't feel different for me right now, that like won't be the case for forever. So kind of feels a bit like impending doom. Not good feelings.
Yeah. Most of what's been happening hasn't hit Vancouver the hardest.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
And at the same time, I feel like I'm hearing in what you're saying a reflection of what I've been feeling, which is a sort of feeling of everything closing in.
Yeah.
It's like we haven't had the bad fires here, but we've had the smoke.
Yeah.
And we haven't had the kind of flooding and the landslides, but we've had atmospheric rivers.
Right.
And it has felt different. I mean, we're so used to heavy rain.
Yeah.
But it's next level.
I found the rain to be, I haven't sensed that the rain is like, it just feels like it's more quantity. And I think that there's something, like, even as I say that, I'm like, am I not noticing things that are happening around me? Like, it's making me feel like I need to be more tuned in to the weather in ways that I probably haven't before. Like you just said, like, it rains, it's November, it rains a lot all the time. So, but there's something, like you just described, as like things closing in and things feeling like we didn't get the worst of it, but like that doesn't mean we won't get our worst version of something at some point. And I just don't feel prepared for that emotionally, like spiritually, physically. I just like don't feel ready. But then again, it's like, when does anyone feel ready for like the destruction of your home or like life or life of a loved one or any of that? Like, no one is ever ready, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting though, like reading the warnings and being told to prepare to lose power, to prepare for shortages of food, to have like a go bag ready, things like that. Again, in Vancouver, we haven't been the most at risk, but we're still close enough that we're getting those warnings and I'm seeing empty shelves at the grocery store and things like that. Again, so blessed that I haven't actually not been able to get food that I've needed right. or had to leave my home. But yeah, it's forcing a confrontation with these things. And there are ways that we can prepare, sort of. I mean, what it kind of reminds me of, and I'm hesitant to use this as a metaphor because I'm sure that it's not like this at all in many ways. But what keeps coming up for me is the idea of getting a diagnosis of like a terminal condition. Because it's this feeling of things are okay maybe right now in this moment, but things aren't going to be. You know, a lot of what we have and take for granted right now, we are losing. And that's just ever more physically apparent around us. And yeah, it's this kind of living under this shadow of an impending doom. And also, you know, with the understanding, like, especially this is all happening in the middle of the pandemic, a lot of lives have been lost in the pandemic, in these natural disasters and weather events here and around the world, especially. And we will all die eventually, maybe because of some of these things and maybe not. But I think for me, these things really bring that reality to the forefront. It feels like with all of this happening around us, our distance from death feels like it's really closing.
Yeah.
Does that resonate
with you? That does resonate for me. I think what that's meant in terms of how I want to be like moving through things and the amount of presence that I want to have in my own life is that I really want to be present in my own life, because I think what you just spoke to feels like the precariousness of things that are mm-hmm. much beyond our control, no matter how much we plan. And I think that there are ways that we might feel less afraid, and there are things that we can do so that we feel like we are taking some control of you know, having water, having like, you know, mm-hmm. Preparedness supplies, like having conversations with family. Like this weekend I had a conversation with my family about like, hey, like we need to be doing these things. Have we thought about a place we would all meet if anything were to happen? I've been really considering. And again, it's like, as I think about the ways that I would imagine getting prepared, it's like the abundance of privilege can't help but jump the fuck out. Cause I'm having conversations with my partner. Like, I think it's really important for us to have a second vehicle so that I can be able to drive. Cause right now I rely on like transit or like a car share. Right. And it's like, well, what if something were to happen? And like, we had to evacuate, like, I don't know. And he wasn't home, you know, like things like that. Right. Which is like, again, I'm realizing how much for so many people, and it's not like I haven't known this, like obviously I'm aware of the privilege that I have, but you're just so much more struck by it. Like there's food shortages in the grocery store, but I happen to have like a freezer full of meat and I have canned goods and like, I, you know, if we needed to, we would be able to like travel if we, you know, like we could do that. We could be somewhere else. And that's not the case for everyone. And so back to what I was saying before is like the precariousness of life has made me really want to be so much more intentional with relationships and also just like notice and be present in my own life. I don't know how else to describe that, but like there's a preciousness of life that I'm really struck by and have been struck by since, especially since seeing a lot of the footage of all those like just highways and infrastructure. And it looks like a bite was taken out of the road and there's just no road. You know, and hearing stories of people saying they're like, they came out of their vehicle to like assess a situation and they looked behind and like there was a rumbling of the earth and the entire mountainside just caved and people like they couldn't, like lives were just gone. The preciousness of life is like so front of mind for me.
This really makes me think about how I've heard the observation from people from outside of Western culture is that Western cultures are so phobic of death that we are so removed from it. We, you know, long-term care homes are so much more common here than in other parts of the world where we aren't with our elders when they die. We don't think about death. We don't have strong rituals and cultural practices around death. And how one of the many horrible side effects of that is that death shapes life mm-hmm. and is so much a part of what it is to be alive and what being alive, what life means. And so if we're phobic of death, we're really robbing ourselves of understanding fully what our lives are and living in a way that we would if we were right up close to the reality of our deaths. And that's what I really heard from what you were saying, is that in this moment where it feels so, death feels so close in so many ways, it changes how you want to be in your own life moment to moment and day to day. Is that?
Yeah. And the other thing that kind of comes to mind is the death phobic piece that is pervasive in like the West and in colonized places, I think, or places where, especially when I say like settler colonialism exists, mm-hmm. where we're like living so disconnected from our own sort of, a lot of us are living disconnected from our ancestral ways of knowing and being in the world. What that made me think of is if we see death as a transition that we're scared of, this change, this thing that's going to happen to all of us that we're so scared of, it actually makes sense because so many of us fear change just in regular life. We like cling on to what is, And we have no idea of what's next, and we can't imagine what's next, but we know it's fucked up and scary and we just don't want it. I'm implicating myself in that. Like I've seen change like that, right? And I don't know if we have enough, not even just like conversations, but schema and like thought and, but beyond like the philosophical, but like in our just day-to-day lives about the importance of like transformation and change. Cause I wonder if we did have access to those things, if we would fear things like change in our own lives on like such smaller scales as much as we do, because the mm-hmm. ultimate transformation obviously is from life to death and we're so shit scared of it. So that's what came to mind for me.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you. And that feels really important in this conversation too, because again, there are so many literal deaths happening and there will just be more as we go further into this climate catastrophe. And there's also a lot of other kinds of death, you know, the death of certain ways of life or just sort of how we've known the world to be. And those deaths are already happening. And there is such a temptation to block it out and deny it because it is scary. It's very scary to see so much fall away and to transition into things we aren't familiar with and don't understand yet. But it feels so essential. And it reminds me of, I don't know if you've heard about this speech that Vijay Prashad gave at COP26. The whole thing is amazing and everybody should listen to it. He talks a lot about the colonial way that Western nations are going about pretending to address, quote unquote, the climate crisis. But when he said that the slogan of the climate justice movement is, we are worried about our future. And he said, children in Latin America, the African continent, Asia, don't have a future. They don't even have a present. This is a middle-class bourgeois Western slogan. Hmm. We have to be worried about now.
Whoa.
That feels so essential as this is happening again, as like we keep having these extreme weather events and disasters in BC, and it's so scary, and we're thinking about what's coming mm-hmm. and we want to numb to it mm-hmm. and I think we miss what's happening now, and considering that it is happening now, what should we be doing?
Yeah, that's a really good point. I would be lying if I said that I didn't feel this desire to shut off the things that feel like they are pulling my attention towards what is happening now, because what's happening now and what will happen into the future, but like what's happening now is horrible. What's happening now is also changeable. Like there's agency more so obviously in now than there is into the future. We don't know what is going to happen tomorrow, right? But I think apathy sets in and being comfortable sets in and turning towards yourself and just like you and yours sets in and individualism sets in and an inability to see what you just described from that quote, the like middle class bourgeois, you know, idea of having a future versus the lack of that as even like a construct because of the conditions that our Western countries have created for other people who just so happen to be born in a different place than we are currently at. You know what I mean? It's like, I feel it's like overwhelming, and yet you recognize that like you have the most amount of privilege in this entire conversation, right? And it kind of reminds me, I know it's going to be different, but it reminds me of when white folks are like, I'm listening and I'm learning, and like, this is so much, like, it's so hard to learn. And all of us racialized folks are like, must be nice to just be listening and learning. And you get to like tap out of this thing as opposed to actually implicating yourself and like living it, right? I see those parallels of like centering your own fragility and like centering my own fragility. That's what I mean. And I think that all roads point to collectivism and collective action, because I think that alone it feels like impossible, completely impossible. And for a lot of us, we're really scared of collective, like being part of like something that big that is like so anti what currently is. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I think for a lot of us, getting to a place where collectively we're all like, yo, what the fuck? Like, the shit that's happening in Wet'suwet'en is like so egregious that all of us, everyone in my apartment complex, is like, this is just so fucked up, because they are fighting both for their own sovereignty, but they're also fighting like a fight that we should be fighting too. And I think that, I don't know, especially in the West, especially in Canada, I just like imagining that feels so foreign. That feels so like impossible. But that is, that to me, that's like the way, if we all do and all believe that like there has to be a better way, as opposed to us as individuals feeling like it's hopeless and there's nothing that we can do at all. So let's just turn inward and like see less of this on whatever social media feed we have access to, you know?
Yeah, it's interesting, because the question I'm asking is how we cope. And on one hand, being overwhelmed, it's not helpful. You know, I've had moments of overwhelm where I can barely speak, you know, never mind act. And that is, it's not, what is that doing? And I don't think that we as individuals with like our individual nervous systems are designed to take in and carry all of the pain and suffering and destruction of the entire world, the entire planet. I don't think that's possible. So I don't think it's always wrong to set limits around how much are you consuming.
I think it's important. We have to do that.
Yes. And for me, at least, being dissociated from it is different and also doesn't feel good. For me, dissociating isn't coping. It's just sort of allowing it to wreak havoc on my system beneath my conscious awareness. And that kind of takes me back to, okay, what or how could we keep this awareness of the precariousness of life and the, you know, the closeness of death in a way that it shapes what we do, in a way that it makes us worry about now, because we're so aware that all we have is now, and that being fully present now means acting in some way.
And with that frame of mind, which I love and I thank you for that, it's like we put off addressing so many systemic and social problems for tomorrow or for another generation. And we do that, it's like a weird intellectualizing of like, this isn't my problem today. It could be my problem tomorrow. Future me will deal with that. My future children will deal with that. The future generation will deal with that. And I kind of wonder if that's sort of the cop-out when neoliberal conversations around the future are taking place. It's really about like, we make decisions about these unborn futuristic children, but we also, the decisions that we make are not even in congruence with like their well-being. Right. It's, and so how do we actually like get true about what path we are actually on if this current behavior that we are all collectively exhibiting will take us, and what will that culminate for our future generations for real? And I think we know what that is. I think we know, like, you know, as we like learn about the climate catastrophes that are happening and the climate crisis that we're in, we know what those things are going to be. But I agree with you. It's like, how do we bring that reality that like that is what's going to happen to every element of the ways that we shape our societies and the decisions that we make in our lives and in our institutions? And I don't know if I believe that a lot of the times, most of the times, those institutions are invested in maintaining what is and not about like taking any kinds of risks or concessions to shape a better, an actual better tomorrow on the principles and values that we see are important or valuable or necessary. The institutions of like, I don't know, the criminal legal system and the ways that we conceptualize like what a good, like, quote unquote, moral and just society is would have us like still hold on to things like the harm that has been done by things like the Indian Act and the lack of real support for people who are harmed by victims, like people who are victims of violence, right? Like the infrastructure that we have to work with just in general, let alone with this climate catastrophe, is horrible. And I just feel like We can't really depend on those same structures to really envision and create what we want them to do, because they're not invested in those things, actually.
Absolutely. And then, you know, thinking about what we're seeing happening in front of us right now and what we're reading and hearing will be a reality in the next 5 years, 10 years. I keep kind of coming back to the thought of a terminal illness diagnosis. I think just because it's harder for me to feel emotionally connected with the reality of an eventual death at the age of 95 or something. Hmm. Like when I think, okay, if I'm going to die one day when I'm 95, how would I live my life differently? It just kind of doesn't emotionally resonate.
Right.
And so when I think more about, well, what if I was going to die in the next year or 6 months or 5 years, that would have more of a power to really overhaul my life. And so then thinking about that same timeline, you know, with just the world around us, it's like, well, what do so many people find meaning in when they are closer to their own, the timeline of their own death?
Hmm.
It is spending time with the people that they love more. Often it's caring a lot less about what people think, or,
right,
you know, being less afraid to speak, being less afraid to express ourselves or take risks. And these things feel really important to me because I think blending like the individual and the collective levels, it's like strengthening our communities today, right? Taking better care of our communities today, being less afraid of taking risks, because knowing that like we have so little to lose when this is what's already happening,
yeah,
around us. And to me, I guess this is an answer to how to cope with this, because I don't know if this will resonate with you. In a weird way, it kind of feels to me like it's the only way to keep feeling alive when death feels so close.
Yeah. I need a second to like take that in. The thing that comes to mind when you were saying we need to do things today is like how if we don't do things today, so many people and communities will have never gotten the things that they deserve and need. Like we keep on talking about wanting a better future, and I think the two of us believe in wanting a better future, starting with the folks who have that no future, right? Like that are like the most living in the most precarious, experiencing the most amount of marginalizations. And I like really enjoy and love that you said I'm paraphrasing what you said, pouring into those people and those communities today. Because in my mind, I'm like, if we don't do that today, and we know that what's coming, right? The things that are inevitable now, given the climate catastrophe and the inaction that our governments are taking to actually address these now inevitabilities. It's like, it reminds me of when people talk about, how do we give people their roses while they're still with us? That's what it reminds me of. It's like, how do we make things sweet and good for people who have never had it, who are still asking for things like a seat at the table, who are still asking for things like fucking sovereignty on their own fucking lands, right? Like that, to me, that's what that, and I think that there's something really powerful and activating in a non-triggering way, but like that feels like an active agent, or feels like agentic and feels like powerful, I guess, when it comes to showing up and actually doing what's needed to love on and affirm and care for and center and prop up those very people and communities now. Because it's almost like, well, it's fucking now or never. Yeah, giving people their roses, but on like the bigger scale of like giving people that access, that liberation, wherever we can create it. Not saying that like we're expecting institutions or systems that create so much violence to give us that. How do we free that up ourselves? Like you and me together, but also like you, me, and folks listening, and like you folks listening and like their partners and their families. Like what does that look like even on that small scale? Because I think that that is agentic and that is life affirming to what, to your point, you know?
Absolutely. And I think we've learned, you know, because death is a transition,
right?
It's not an ending. And the world has died or ended for so many people and groups of people so many times. It does every day. And still so much exists. And so the sweetness and the pleasure and the loving the people who really deserve it and who need it and who should be given their flowers, I feel that so strongly, how life-affirming that is, and how, yeah, it can be so easy to, again, see the idea of death being close as being just morbid and terrifying and awful. And I think it also heightens joy and pleasure and love. And that's so much of why it's so important, regardless of the scenario and regardless of, you know, what is it going to look like in 10 years or in 30 years, why it's so important to have, you know, that awareness and that closeness with death, is so that we can live life the way it's supposed to be lived and have the values that really matter, you know, then, and to be able to really understand, like, the feeling and the meaning that we can get from pouring into our communities and the communities that really need it feels so much more meaningful, valuable, worthwhile, real, alive than doing a bunch of online shopping, because that temporarily kind of gives you that high and makes you forget about what's going on.
Mm-hmm. Like all the ways that we distract ourselves.
Yeah.
And yeah, it makes it tangible. You said real. The word that came to mind is like tangible, like material. Like you can see it. It's not like an idea. What would it mean to live out your values in like today, tomorrow? What values would actually matter? I love that question of like, if you knew that you were going to die in 6 months, like it probably would sort of chip away at a lot of the bullshit that you think matters but actually doesn't matter, or that you spend a lot of time and attention or give a lot of time and attention to when you really know that this other area of your life or this other area of your community or family or whatever or experience is like begging you to turn your mind to it. And reminds me of like how we always have sort of general conversations of shadow work and like what's hiding in the shadows oftentimes is the thing that you know you need to work on, or you know that, or it works you, like, and it's like, how do we actually work with those deep-seated feelings and the values that we say that we have? How do we make those like material action oriented things as opposed to, you know, hypothetical or intangible or like principles? Like, what would that mean? And I'm always so interested about like that alignment of values and action. And so, yeah, I that really resonates for me, what you just said.
So we came into this episode with the question of how do you cope with the climate crisis or with climate grief? And I'm wondering, did you feel like we answered this question? Did this conversation have any resemblance to the conversation you expected that we would have coming into it?
I mean, I think at the beginning of this conversation, I was like, wow, I'm feeling really sad and scared. And I also want to say that I admire how you always seem to drill right down into the thing that feels the scariest. And so thank you for holding space for this conversation, because as we started having it, I was like, my emotions are way too big and I feel like dissociating. I feel like this is a lot, like talking about how death is on your front door. I'm like, oh fuck, shit, right? So I think that this isn't the conversation that I thought we were going to have, or at least I'm appreciative of the arc that this conversation has had, because I think that it's really important to always come back to what we can do, like how we can move, how we can be thinking as opposed to being deficit based, because I really do feel, and this is not to call anybody out or in, just an observation, that a lot of the times like-minded folks who share values that we do spend a lot of energy and time in catastrophizing, and they don't give opportunities to show how we can move, how we can be, what we can do. And I think that when you do that, you're really setting people up for, it's just a really painful practice. And I also find it to be deeply disconnected from the ways that so many community members are agentic and doing things right now, and how, like, if we are not throwing weight behind them but we're talking about how everything's fucked up, I find that to be really meaningless. And so I'm really grateful for this conversation, because yeah, I didn't expect it, and I'm feeling a lot more, I wouldn't say capable, but I would say feeling a lot more primed to do, as opposed to primed to just like receive information. Thank you.
Hey everyone, it's Nick.
And Lala.
If you've been listening to Scene and you like what you hear,
please share us with your friends.
Subscribe to the podcast.
Follow us on Instagram at Scene the Podcast.
Write a review and just tell us what you think.
And help make this work sustainable by supporting Scene the Podcast on Patreon.
We need our beautiful community, and we cannot do this without you.